Rashan Sunzit Lubacha said that just like there's a AAA we have, which is out there, which will helps you when you have problems with your car. So there's AAA in marriage. And this is actually, these are preventative measures. They are not, it says there's AAA, there are three things that a man has to know for a marriage. These are for the men. The three things a man has to know for the marriage, and actually there's a fourth one, which we'll add in as well. AAA are attention, appreciation, and affection. Affection. The fourth A is not really an A, it's an aleph, it's achrayus. Also starts with an A. Now, I've done this over the years. I've asked the guys like what they think the AAA are, and I've gotten answers like agree, admit, accept, you know.
Apologize,
you know.
Attention,
appreciation,
and affection. So we're not going to talk about always agreeing and always admitting and always accepting and always, right? But we are going to talk about these three. I do want to point out just for a second that when I told this to my wife said, okay, she says, so what does a man need in a marriage? I said, I don't know. She says, the man needs KKK. I says, what's KKK? She says, COVID, COVID, and COVID. I said, yep. Now that is very true. Now one of the main things a man wants of his wife is his wife should respect him. Now there's a very simple formula that his wife should respect you. If you're respectable, she'll respect you.
Is that hard? Is that hard?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But if you're not respectable, she's not going to respect you. So it's hard to make people. Sometimes, for some reason or other, people just don't act respectable, and then they want respect. So just as an important point, just while you're chassanu, if your sales piece to your wife is that you're a ventura, then she never sees you learn. So how's she supposed to respect you as a ventura if she's always doing other things, right? In my days, which is not true anymore, at least tells yeshiva, the chassanu said the Torah by their shevrachos, not on the parsha, on the sugur, and they were not interrupted. And you said by the ofruf, and you weren't interrupted. And so the ofruf took place in Tel Shiva and the Nadigan, in front of all the yeshivas, and all the rebbeim, and the whole yeshiva. And you get up there and say Shabbat Torah on the sugi you're learning in front of the Gifter and Rebbeim and the Pesach and Isaac and Rebbeim and if you weren't well prepared, you'd been absolutely out of yourself. So you had to learn when you were a chassan because you didn't want to get idiot out of yourself in front of the whole yeshiva, right? So you would prepare. And then you would say it again by the chasna, by the Kabbalah's pun, and by the chasna's dish, you said Torah. You would say Torah by the chasna's dish. And the bracha would not hack in. And if Rav hacked in, we would get up and say, Shah! We would scream. Right? So there's another way of doing it, which is even better, because one of my chaverim actually was in a different, had a zufruf in a different city. No, one of my chaverim here had a zufruf in Cleveland, Rabbi Itstein. He had a zufruf in Cleveland, he married a Cleveland girl from Cleveland, so they, by his, the cousin's dish, they sang him down. So he says, don't worry, I'm coming tomorrow to Shevrachas, I'll come early, and you're telling them to me privately. And that's what he did. So he had a private audience with the gifter to say over his chassan Torah. He didn't have to say it, to the whole tzibur. He said, don't worry, I'll come early tomorrow and you'll tell it to me privately. And that's what he did. Yeah. Everything felt so comfortable. So that was a wonderful thing. And I got up and I remember, I can tell you what I said on my ofruf. I said on the dinner chatzitza on Mizbeach, I can tell you, I said, that was by Shabbat Shabbat. So, the chosin tish I spoke on the dinner, the Rashi and the Bezim of the Kamagil Woman Aleph, the dinner of Shachas, I said Torah, Hezbro, Plunkus, Rashi, Tosis, Kashish, and Rashi, Mahal to answer it, the whole nine yards, So, but nowadays they don't do that anymore. By Rashiva's Aden, Rabbi Ephraim, Zichron Livracha. So Rabbi Ephraim, Rabbi Gifter took him as a son-in-law, because his oldest son-in-law, obviously for a reason. According to Talmud Chacham, it was an area so the minhag was they would sing the chosam down. But the Rishim was not very happy with that. So when they sang the chosam, when they started singing in the middle of Ishtikul, Rigitha got up and he said, there's two reasons why you sing the chosam down. He says, one is because you feel that the chosam is not knowledgeable enough to say something of value, and therefore he's not more, you have rachmonos in him. Or because the tzuheders, the listeners, are amaratzim, and they have no patience to listen to the Ritar because they're not the Minhag Chachamim. So I can guarantee you my son-in-law is a Talmud Chacham, if I don't know words. And then he asked them to stand up and continue, and nobody interrupted. So, that being said, the point being, you should, if not, gonna be, if you're not going to be saying real Torah, you know, nowadays a lot of times chassidim say like the Veritas on the Parsha or something like that. Okay, so that's not going to be major motivation to appear something like that. But there's halachas to learn. There is beyond the halachas of Nida, there's halachas Shabbos that you want to learn and you want to get down well. There are other areas of halacha. The reason why I started learning halacha, well, I mean, I learned halachas of Bahar also, but the reason why I started learning halacha, like Be'im, Masugyas, and stuff like that, and eventually Paskin Shilas, was because we got married, and like the first Shabbos, we already had a halacha shayla in our apartment. And my wife said, like, what do we do with it? I don't know. So we put out the Shemir Shabbos Kilchus. In those days, it was only available in the Hebrew version. And we figured out how to say the word in Hebrew, which would give us the index to find where it was in the Sefer. And we found it in the Sefer, and we looked, like, read it through, and I looked at it, etc. And my wife says, can we rely on that? I said, I don't know. Like, how do I know? I mean, he's a Prince of Chacham, but he's not my Pesach, so why should I rely on that? And this happened midday Shabbat b'Shabbat, because my wife was very good at asking halacha Shabbos. So after a little while, I said, you know, I really need to start learning halacha. And that's why I started learning halacha, because it's pretty embarrassing that you spent all these years in yeshiva, like, you know, you don't know anything, right? But that being said, you need to have some time that you're really learning in the sukkah, you're holding in the sukkah, and that, you know, that the cup is engaged in learning and thinking and learning, etc., which is that it'll come across as a different person to her. Okay, now that we've dealt with KKK a little bit, so if you do these right, you'll get some of your KKK. Okay, attention. There's a story with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. One of my chareim has a ha'ara on this story, which I think is correct understanding of the story. And it's very important to understand this point. The story with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that he was traveling together with an Adam Gadol, and they were going for the purpose, I think, of Pinyan Shulim, or whatever it was they were going, and they stopped by an inn. And they stopped by the inn, and the innkeeper, the woman over there, the mistress of the home, she realizes this who these Tminichabim are, and she says, you know, and she says, tells the maid, I'm serving the rabbis myself, and she starts serving them. Of course, while she's serving them, she's talking to the rabbis. She's talking about the challenges of living. You live out in these inns. They used to live out in these inns all by themselves. You know, they were not in a Yiddish yeshuv, and they're self-sufficient. They had their own chickens and their own cows, and, you know, and all the challenges of running this whole farm and the wheat, you know, and the vegetables, you know, and the winters and the porridge. And she's telling up all of her story. She's discussing it with her, etc. And the other Talmud Chacham is thinking and learning. So at the end of the whole process, so it comes time to pay, and she says, "No, please. It was my honor to have such a rabbanim under my roof. Please, don't pay me anything." Fine. They walk out. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter turns to the other person and says, "I think you had a child of Ganeva." She says, "He said, what was the Ganeva?" He says, "You didn't pay for your food." Says, "But she said." He says, "What did she say?" She said that because she felt so honored of having our presence, so I gave her something. I gave her interest. I focused on her. I gave her something of value. I gave her my time. You ignored her totally. So what did you pay her with? That's what he said. So that's how the story goes. Famous story. But the Velt understands the story incorrectly. So that you know, that's another time Chacham was right. You know, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter had really no interest in her kashkalach. and in the Shepsalach, and everything like that. Well, what he really cares about her kachkalach? Like, you know, what does he cares about her chickens? But he was a very sweet, nice guy, very very polite, and therefore he was, you know, he made the conversation a chip. So the Chara, Rabbi Sosland, was over Ganeva's Das. Because, like, she thought the rabbi was interested in her, was talking to her, etc. He really wasn't. So what's the answer? He was interested in her. Why? Because it was important to her, it was important to him. Not that he has a major interest in Kachkalos and Shepsalos, but it was important to her, it's important to him. So, when you want to give your wife attention, you have to understand that if it's important to her, it's important to you. Right? So, a woman's interests are different than a man's interests. Okay. And a man's interests are different than a woman's interests. So, the woman, you know, she wants, come in the day, she wants to talk about, you know, something happened with her friends, she wants to talk about, you know, something happened with the kids, and there are things which, like, the husband not, like, not so interested in. Okay. But if she's important to you, and this is important to her, then it's important to you. And this is true, by the way, with your children. If it's true with your wife, it's true with your children. Like, you know, so your children have lives, and they have interactions, and they have interactions at their level. Which, like, so that to a child, this is their life. This is important to them. They want to share it with their parents. They want to share it with their father. They want their father to be interested in the fact that, you know, that they had the that they lost their they lost their marbles. You know, okay. Come on, I gotta get a joke out of that. I gotta at least get some laughter out of that one, okay? Right? You know, whatever the situation is, they want them to be interested. That is point number one under attention. So that's, and that's is much more challenging than you think it is. Because, like, fine. Okay, point number two. There is a, there's a person up in Muncie. His name is Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz. Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz. So Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz has a school over there, I think called Darchei Noyim or something like that. But before that, he was involved in a project working with teens potentially at risk, etc. And that's his field. Chassidish guy, but, you know, very with it and on the ball, and, you know, he able to connect into the teens and understand them, etc. So he's once working with the father of a boy who's having the problems, and meets with the father, and he asks the father, so tell me, what's your son's favorite food? He says, I don't know. What foods does your son not like? He says, I don't know. What's the name of your son's friends? I don't know. He says, okay, you have homework. He says, next time before we meet, you need to know what your son's three favorite foods are, and who his three favorite friends are, etc., etc., etc. He says, if there's a person important to you, what do you mean you don't know what he likes? I love my son very much, and I care about him tremendously, and I have no idea what's going on in his life. It means you really don't care about him, because if that's important to him, it has to be important to you. The problem is that, what's the challenge? Because, like, the circle, the universe that the son lives in, and the circle of the universe that the father lives in, or into the universes. Like, you know, so these, he doesn't relate naturally to these topics. You know, might be the son is excited about basketball, the father's not excited about basketball, the son's excited about, you know, following some sports, and the father, like, you know, doesn't know which end is up when it comes to sports. So he has to find a way to connect with them anyway. So that's true with the children, it's also true with your wife. So, you can ask her, if you're not sure, like, you can ask her, like, what is on her mind, and what's important to her, and what type of, you know, and you get to know your wife. You can have guys, I went out on, you know, I was dating with this girl X amount of time, I still don't know what type of food she likes. Now, I'm not saying food has to be a major topic, but, like, you know, since we do spend a lot of time eating and people happen to get excited about what they like, what's your college favorite food? I don't have no idea. Okay, ask her. Right? It's a message that I care, I'm interested, etc. Give me one second, please. Okay. The Russian created this wonderful thing called cell phones and, you know, texting, all different things, etc. And, you know, I'll tell you why the Russian created it. So, like, you'll be walking in the store, let's say supermarket or, you know, drugstore, and you'll see a guy on the cell phone. What did you want again? Now, I've been in many stores over my lifetime. It says, and as of yet, I can't recall ever seeing a woman standing in the store saying to her husband, "What did you want again?" But I have seen men say to their wife, "What do you want again?" Right? So, she has to get taken to do something. Like, so how come you remember? That's a lack of attention. You want to be attentive to her means when she speaks to you, you should focus. That you should be able to remember what she said. Right? The women seem to be very good at it. They seem to be attentive to their husband's needs, and therefore they were. If a husband said he wants something, they said that's important to them enough, they're going to remember. Right? So it should be vice versa as well. Now, I mean, some people have, you know, some point that they develop, you know, early onset of senility, but that's a different story. You know, like, you know, at the age of 25. No, I don't think so. What?
Say?
Early onset of senility.
What's that?
They start forgetting.
Oh.
Yeah, but they're not at the age of 25.
Yeah. I was looking for the
shortage. Right. The wife has to also take care of something. The wife has to also make sure to please be home on time. Oh, I forgot. Right? What does that mean? What are you saying?
Like, you know, I don't love you.
Right, as we spoke last time. Like, you know, right?
Every time.
Right? You're not attentive to her. She asked you to do something, you didn't do it. Right? So you're not being attentive to her. Now, it doesn't have to be negatives. It can be positives also. I don't do this anymore because, like, whatever. Kind of lazy bum. But what's wrong with leaving a little note on the dining room, the kitchen table before you leave? If you leave the house before she gets up, you know, wishing her a wonderful day, and I'm so happy that I'm married to you, and I hope you have a wonderful day. Love, and sign your name. Right? Takes you 15 seconds, but she walks into the kitchen and says, "Wow, there's a note he left me that he thought about." He was thinking about me. So that's attention. I had a individual in Cleveland who was getting. You think you're going to remember all of this? You have something coming. Anyway, that's a hint to write. If you want me to say explicitly, I'll say explicitly. Right. Okay. A fellow asked me, he has the second marriage and he was worried about getting it right, etc. Says, is there any formula in the Torah which tells us, you know, how to create, you know, connection, emotional connection, etc.? I said, yes, there is. One of my mentors in Yeshiva, pointed out to me that you, as you learn through Hillel's Needle, you learn the area called Harchokus. Have you started Harchokus yet? Right? What?
About
right. So Harchokus are the things which Chazal limited to the husband and wife when she's in Nida, because of various, you know, part of them, the goal is to create a little bit of a space so they won't come and do something improper. So Chazal is saying these things, when done, create connection. So therefore, when she's Anita, create space. Well, didn't they just tell you what to do? They just tell you how to do it, right? So Chazal say that you can't have a meal together unless you have some type of a reminder by the meal, because eating together with somebody creates an emotional connection. So Chazal said you can't have a meal without having some type of reminder. According to the Chacham Sodom, holds that you can't take a walk together,
Right? What's interesting in halacha is the crazy place you pass is you can give your wife a matana when she's in need. So what does it tell you? The presents don't create an emotional connection, right? So husband and wife have a little bit of a blowout, right? So what does the husband do in America? Buys her a present, right? Stupid.
Have dinner together.
Have dinner together. Spend time together. Right? That's what Chazal said creates connection. Okay, so you go out and you buy your wife a present, right? Write a card. Write a nice card. Write, buy your Kala present. Write a very nice card about, you know, you're looking forward to building a bias together and you think that she's such a special person and she's going to add such a dimension to your life and she's added already so much, etc. You've given thought. You've thought about what you think about this person and you've written it on a piece of paper and you give it to her.
Paskin.
Crazy placing. Renaissance options. Has a safe run in your day.
That you could give her a present.
Yeah. The Baal Yeshul quotes it. That's what the Paskin will look on myself like that. Some point them say if it's a type of present which is about intimacy that you shouldn't do, but you know, but the general present is what. So it comes out that you know you go into the drugstore and you see a little trinket, you know, a dollar trinket which you know that she likes, and you buy it for her. That is probably more valuable because it means you're aware of her little details in her life and you thought about her than buying a standard present. But you'd have to know her. You know, you buy her a box of chocolates. You buy her roses. Yeah, go ahead. I had to figure out that my wife likes roses. Most women like roses, you know. Right? I happen to know that she happens to like, you know, strawberry shortcake cards. You know, that's not standard necessarily. I know that she likes, so I pick up a strawberry shortcake card for her, and I write a little something, and I give it to her. That says much more that I'm aware of her, and I think about her, than buying a standard present. But it's... So there's a fascinating tshuva from the Rebbe Yehuda's son. So in Europe, they made a tanoim at the time of the engagement. They made a tanoim, which means basically they said that if we don't go through with the marriage, there's going to be a kanas. Okay, so that generated people who wanted to break up with the shaduchim and felt they had a valid reason why they allowed to break up the shaduchim without getting paid a kanas. So there's a whole genre of tshuvas which deal with what are valid reasons to break up shaduchim, right? Because of this, you know, nowadays most people don't make it, except for like the Chassidim still doing some real, you know, litvish yeshivish, like the briskers, they make a tanoim. Most people don't, they make the tanoim at the time of the chuppah. But then it's too late, right? For this point. The purpose of a tanoim by the chuppah, by the way, contrary to public opinion, that it's the purpose of it is in order to get 3 more kibbutzim, 2 Adim sign that it's going to be this, which that's also true. But besides that, there is another purpose for it as well. The purpose for tanoim, because there's a memorah that says that a person does kedushin without going through a formal shidduch process, shidduchim, which means a formal commitment, is considered doing it. It's a chutzpah, and you get malchus for it. So Rav Moshe said that you know even when I can make a tanoim earlier, if we don't make some type of a formal commitment before the chasna, we have a problem. So we're going to make a formal commitment before the chasna that we're going to move forward with this chasna the next hour or so, or next half an hour, whatever it is. But at least there's a shidduch, which is there's an actual real and halachic engagement taking place. But anyway, so the beautiful son has a tshuva where a person wants to break the shidduch that the father of the young lady wants to break the shidduch, and he has 2 complaints against the chosim. Number one, that the chosim one time he was with the kala and he grabbed her, physically grabbed her. Even though she was not married to him and she's Anita, she's also to him, physically grabbed her. Number one. And number two, he has not written her a letter since they got engaged. So Nadi Yehuda's son said, the first time is not a taina, there's a yitzhar in the world, they should have been more careful, but you can't break a shidduch because of that. The second time is a good taina, he's not a mensch, and you can break the shidduch. Now, you would not have predicted that had I asked you beforehand without... I mean, you know about saying the story that there has to be something, some kinesh over here. But if I stop and, you know, take you on the street and ask you, like, which one is a valid reason to break a shidduch? Anyway, so that's what he wrote. So nowadays we have all these wonderful things, but a card from a chassan is a tremendous thing. A letter from a chassan is a tremendous thing. and your wife will read it and read it and read it and read it. Your cow will read it and she'll read it, and you'll get married, and you'll walk in, you know, every Pesach cleaning 5 years down the road, and you'll walk in and you'll see your wife sitting in the bed with a dreamy look on her face, and you'll realize that she found the box where she saved all of your letters that you wrote her, and she's reading them again, and she has this dreamy look on her face, remembering her engagement, right? And then one day your kids will find it and they'll read the letters and you'll say, wow, daddy was really mushy, and you know, right, fine, you know, that's part of life.
Is that inevitable?
Which part? The kids will find it? Really? Of course. Yeah, of course. What's the child? There's nothing private in your marriage. There's nothing sacred in your house. That's part of kids, especially teenage girls reading your letters. Huh. Man, daddy was really mushy. Or teenage boys. a lot of fun. You know, like,
extra right. Patches than Chappas.
Right. So, but you need to write. You need to, you know, I know a young man who found, he went to the drugstore, and you know, has a nice selection of cards, and he found a card which he felt just said perfectly exactly what he wants to say to his kala, and he took it and gave it to her. and her response was, so you're saving this to use again? Which was the right response. you ever see girls' letters to each other, girls' cards to each other? Have you ever seen it? You have any sisters? What sisters?
I've seen things.
You ever seen their cards? Where they look like the whole card is written all over. There's no space on the card.
They take off like every and they write smaller.
Right, and they and not only that, they even doctor the pictures and they put like comments onto the pictures, like they caption onto the pictures of the card with, you know, explaining, you know, this one is this and this is this, and they're like, you know, they push it right, a whole message. They put their heart into it. So good. So that is attention. Sounds pretty easy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Next, one more point of attention is a woman has needs, and your wife, as an individual, has her emotional needs. What are your wife's needs? So I had a conversation yesterday with somebody. I wanted to point out that I'm a tzaddik, okay? Because I didn't pulverize the guy. It took self restraint. It did, but then I decided, because I'll say Mishael Ladeya Asarach L'Rachim Alav. A person has no intelligence. You have no rachmanis on him, which means that I basically, instead of explaining it to him, I realized it's going to waste my breath. So I just like gave him some cute answer and basically deflected him. The guy, you know, moved on with my life. So that was the gevura, to like realize that it's going to be a waste of my time. So the person says to me, you know, like, not just in the world of marriage, you know, of Torah learning, like, any person wants to be successful in any of their life, can't spend his whole time just thinking about what his wife and his kids needs, or he thinks about his business. So I want to be successful learning, I should do the same thing. So they said, you know, and you know, Riyasha didn't spend time thinking about his wife's needs. So I could have said to him, you're not Riyasha. And Riyasha was able to marry somebody of his caliber, right? Because he deserved it. I don't think you necessarily deserve that. But I didn't say that. I could have said, you know, that the Chazal say the person marries somebody that they cobble the oil of their wife, and you know, I can't tell you, but Rav Shlomo Zalman did spend time thinking about his wife and his kids, right? You know, so you know, why is Rabbi Yashav your model as opposed to Rav Shlomo Zalman? I could have said that. I could have told him that Rav Shach, you know, says that Rav Shach had a son and became like a Mizrahi, and there was another Tom Chochum, Ben Abrach was younger than Rashad, who was all his children turned out. So Rashad said, because by me Friday night, the Zoom, I used to open his hamper and think of learning. And he would spend time singing with his kids. So I could have told him that. I said, there's a system, so it seems to work for it, but you know, unless you're really immersed in that system, it's not going to work. Now, if you, any of you know me by now, you realize that that was a total deflection. That was not a real answer. But he took it as a real answer. I mean, totally, I have no interest in discussing this because I think you're out of your mind. That's basically what that real said. It's a real translation of what I just said, but he didn't realize that. And he thought, oh, that's okay. I didn't answer his question. But should he do that or not do that? I didn't answer his question. The answer is I thought he's out of his mind, to the point like I'm not going to waste my time talking about it. So they'll say that terrible gemara is all benurav oil zuisha. A woman is an oil. It doesn't mean a physical oil of going and making a pronosis. As many times nowadays, a woman is making the pronosis. It means the responsibility of being aware of your wife's emotional needs. This is called a mitzvah. The stipler has a letter where he calls it. That's the mitzvah arna. Mitzvah arna is not a physical bia. It's being aware of the woman's emotional needs. One of those emotional needs is having bia with her. But a person who would do that and not be aware of his wife's emotional needs is a ganav, he says. And a person who thinks he's going to come to the world of Kedusha by being mismayed and his responsibilities to another individual, A, it's not bittul Torah because that is your responsibility. B, he says, there's no way you can reach levels of Kedusha if you're not doing your mitzvahs. And C, this poor woman, the only individual in the world who really can give her these emotional needs is her husband, and her husband's ignoring her. And he's thinking he's a tzaddik while he's at it also. So therefore he'll never change. So she looks at this person and realizes that she has no hope, and the achzava, the disappointment, is heartbreaking. And she lives with it the rest of her life. This is the language of the stipler's letter. I didn't tell him this. It was like, whatever. That's attention. Okay, appreciation. So the first point, obviously, is a karas hatov. To finish the story, there's a person named Rabbi Travis has a book called Pirkei Hanhagas Abayas, something like that. Pirkei Hanhagas Abayas, Hanhagas Abayas. It's old. When the first books came out in Hebrew in Lashon Kurdish about Shalom Bayis came out years and years ago. It came out in the 60s or early 70s. So here's a story over there, which I don't know if the story is true or not, but it definitely makes a good point, that there is a story about a woman who was a farmer. The husband and wife were farmers, and then she had a big farm, and they had all these the husband and his kids and his hired help, and and she would make the meals for them, etc. This goes on for years and years and years. One day, they sit down to breakfast or supper, whatever it was, and she puts out this spread, straw. Every plate has straw. And the serving plate in the matter has straw. I said, like, what are you doing? She says, I've been doing this 23 years and nobody's ever one time told me anything which indicates that I noticed that what I'm giving them is different than straw. That's the story. Is the story apocryphal? Probably, but it's a good point. Good. So you better say thank you to your wife, number one. Number two, when you say thank you, so there's different ways to say thank you. There's a thank you, which is this clothing sticker statement, thank you so much for whatever you do. And doesn't say that you really noticed. Rebrevda points out that we have in benching, the purpose of benching really is to say thank you for lunch. I just had lunch, personal thank you for lunch. But we don't start there. We start, we have Eretz Yisrael, the Russian took out of Mitzrayim, and he gave us the Torah, and he gave us Bris, and he gave us Eretz Yisrael, and he gave us, Chayim, 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 and thank you for lunch. That's how you say thank you. Right? Bikurim. So, you bring the Bikurim, they've had a good year, good crop, Baruch Hashem, Rami Yerubim, Eretz Raima, and you start with this Gansa Maisa Geshichta, Gansa Megillah. Just say thank you, Rosh Hashanah. I had a good crop. Thank you for the good crop. No. Let's Arami Arvinovi, Yair Mitzrayim, Yaakov Avinu, going down to Mitzrayim, Rosh Hashanah took down to Mitzrayim, Eretz Israel. Whoa. So That's how you say thank you. So you say thank you for, you know, for a Shabbos. It's thank you for making the challah. Thank you for getting up, staying up late Thursday night to make the challah. And thank you for the soup. And thank you for going out and buying the chickens. And she will tell you, will you please stop it? So you'll do it anyway. After the third time, you say, please. She says, will you, if you don't stop, I'm not going to cook any more food for you. Okay, then you stop. You tell her, I want to say more, but I'm not because you asked me not to. Right? Now, but you have to mean it. It's not just I'm a joke. It sounds like a joke a little bit. It's not a joke. It means you really appreciate the fast. You know all those things for you. There's a gorgeous piece. There's a sefer called Seder Tikkun Hamidus. Familiar with the sefer?
I don't know.
This little swarm out yay high, colored dust jackets, like real bright yellow and light blue and stuff. The yeshiva has it. So it's like 8 volumes. So one of the volumes, they talk about the following story. It talks about the inner curse of time. And he contrasts two stories. Chachma Yisrael and Chachma Yisrael. So there's a Gemara in Yevamos. And Gemara in Yevamos says a story with Rav. Rav had a wife who was a shrew. Simply put, she was a shrew. You know what a shrew is? Everybody knows what a shrew is, right?
Nope.
A horrible woman. Okay? Shrew. Shrew. Right? There's a Shakespeare, The Taming of the Shrew. You never read Shakespeare either. Okay, whatever. Fine. Okay? I don't tell you she was, I'm a little more sophisticated. So, the Morris says that when Robin asked for chickpeas for supper, she'd serve lentils. He'd ask for lentils, she'd serve chickpeas. The Gemara says that one time that Rav's son asked him, what's shot in the pasuk? Kumutza ni marmi mava? He says, Isha, I find worse than death. The woman who's referring to it says, it's like your mother. Right? That's a good example. Chavos Chaim deals with wise and Lashon Hara. Fine. So Morris says that Rav's son, as Rav's son got older, he became a nice, smart boy in his own right. So Rob was sitting learning and says, go tell mommy that I would like to have lentils for supper, and she would make chickpeas. And vice versa. So the kids saw firsthand what's going on. So one day he says, well, this is stupid. So he goes to the mother, apparently there's only two things on the menu, right? So he says, his father says, Rob asked for chickpeas. So the boy went to the mother and says, Daddy asked for lentils, so she made chickpeas. Right? Right. The next day, he asked for lentils, so he went, and vice versa, and he kept flipping it. So Rav says to his son, mommy's been very nice lately. He says, well, to tell you the truth, I've been flipping it around. Rav says, no, don't lie. If I asked you for chickpeas, say I asked for chickpeas. She makes lentils, she makes lentils. So the son asks, how do you deal with this? She says, isn't it enough that she takes care of my children, and she allows me to have physical relations with her? Like, I have a course of time to her. I have no time. That's what Rob said. Story number one. Go on.
Where was that?
What?
Where was that?
It's a morning of Amos. Samach Dalet, I think. Something like that. Somewhere in the between Samach Gimel and Samach Hay. Okay. Second story. This is a famous story. You've heard of Socrates, right? We've all heard of Socrates. Socrates was a famous, Chachmim was Erlem, fine. Socrates had a wife named Xantippe. 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 Ever heard of her?
Nope.
Okay. So Xantippe with a capital X was Socrates' wife. Xantippe with a lowercase x is a woman who's a shrew. There's a word in the dictionary, Xantippe, which means a woman who's a shrew. Because she was such a shrew, she went into the dictionary as a woman who's a shrew. It's called a Xantippe. Okay?
X-A-N?
X-A-N-T-I-P-P-E. Okay? So the story goes that one day, Socrates is sitting there with the Talmidim, and they're saying a kakir and learning, And the wife walks in and starts screaming at her husband, you bench kvetcher, you're not doing good with your life. You sit there, you say your hakiras and your philosophy and your mises, like, get a life and don't do something of value. She starts screaming at him in front of all of his disciples. And he ignored her. And totally relaxed, like, didn't get excited at all, because he's Socrates, remained totally calm, Right? So after she walks out, so the students say to Socrates, he came in the Zoyes out, and you know, I'm sure they said in Yiddish, like, how do you live with this? Right? I mean, how such a good kasha? How do you say it in Yiddish for sure? Right? How can you do this? And he says to them the following answer. Right? So Rav said, I have a curse of Tavdur. I appreciate the fact, you know, that's not what Socrates said. Socrates said, if the donkey would come in the middle of our conversation and start braying, it would bother me. If the rooster would start crowing in the middle of the conversation, it would bother me. I look at her like a rooster and like a donkey. Ru'u ma bein chachmei Yisrael l'chachmei umas ha'olam. Okay. Fine.
What is this story?
Which story?
That story.
It's a famous story. Where is brought down?
It's a famous story.
Okay. So that's the simple understanding of the word appreciation. But we're going to add another layer to it. Translate the word. When I say the word appreciate, when I appreciate somebody, give me the idea that it conjures up in your mind.
Realize what they did.
Okay, what else? When I say I appreciate you, what am I saying?
I'm recognizing. I'm better because of it. I'm like, I got something from you. I benefited.
I'm still saying, like, appreciating that difference.
I recognize you.
Appreciating it.
I recognize you care about me.
Okay, why are we focusing on a course of time? I appreciate you. I appreciate this work of art. What do I mean? I really have a course of time that have changed my life. I appreciate it. What am I saying?
You understand.
I understand it. Okay.
I care about it.
I value it. I respect it. Okay, so that's you're supposed to appreciate your wife, right? There's appreciation doesn't mean a car. Appreciation means I respect her. I appreciate her for who she is. I understand her value, right? Now, so let's go back. Is that when we spoke about, you know, a little bit? We touched on the idea that women are different than you, right? We touched on a little bit, right? Right. And we pointed out that, like, so sometimes women are like not logical, right? And they seem to like look at the world differently than you in every which way. You need to appreciate that. You need to respect that. You need to understand that her approach and her understanding and her view of the world is just as valuable as yours. You have to be able to respect her. For what you bring, so a woman's emotional, okay, beautiful, right? But, you know, we discussed this idea that, you know, it's not logical, you know, but sometimes what they do, okay. And why is logic better than emotion?
Makes sense.
Okay. And who said that's the criteria of what's better? Okay.
I guess it depends when and what dosage.
Okay.
Depends on the situation, obviously. In any situation, if you go with something that's logical versus something that's emotional, you could be doing the wrong thing. Like, that's what makes logic better than emotion. Like, it's just chriya itself, kind of.
I understand, but the problem is, we also understand that we live in a world where emotions probably are the factor which decides most situations that we deal with. And the person who has the emotion is able to understand somebody else's feelings and be able to appreciate them better. The person is able to convey their message better. The person can get things done better. There's a lot of what you can do with emotion, which you cannot do with just logic. You'll find that most of your salespeople, there's two types. There's the ones which are the conniving, crafty ones, and they're all logic. They have it down to a science how they can take advantage of you. Then there's a sale, most people realize that after they walk away, and they'll never use them again. They made the sale, but they will not make multiple sales. But the salesperson that you feel you really emotionally connected to them, you'll go back to them again and again and again. So which one's better? Right? I don't know which one's better. So so you have to appreciate the fact that she has her personality with all of her makeup and her who she is. Is a tremendously powerful thing, and you appreciate her for who she is. She's a work of art. You respect her. You have to respect your wife. Okay. Now, let's take it a step further. Sometimes your wife will get on your nerves. Okay? So the answer is, this is, I don't know, some of you didn't, you know, you're dating, shows me, I spoke about Bashert. Right? And my point about Bashert is irrelevant while you cannot look for a Bashert, because you don't know how to look for a Bashert, because you don't know what your Bashert looks like. Right? Maybe your Bashert, Rav's Bashert was a shrew, you know so maybe, he didn't know to look for that. So, right? So how do you look for your Bashert, right? So, you can use the kelim you have and say, etc. What Bashert is in the game and b'di'evitz. Worked out. It's Bashert that it worked out. Well, part of Bashert is that this woman is the person who is going to bring out the best in you. And she will do that by being very challenging. These challenges are tailor-made by Kodesh Baruch Hu for you. That's it. Bereshim sent them for you to make you grow. I think those, the dating tools. I told you over the analogy from Rizal Tower about the diamond cutting, diamond polishing. So we'll just repeat it again for those of you who didn't hear it, and those of you who did hear it, you probably forgot it by now. So I was the situation. I was once having a conversation with a fellow who drives the long distance drives for the Muncie Tours buses. So he told me that once upon a time he was the private driver for Rabbi Tauber, Shlita, Shrigzunt. And he asked Rabbi Tauber, asked him for advice in Shalom Bayis. So I asked him, how is your Shalom Bayis? He says, well, there's a reason why I drive the long distance drives for the Muncie Tours buses. He said, I find that absence makes the heart grow fonder. So when I'm away for a few days, I come home, the first day or two is really great because my wife missed me. Then afterwards, it's time to get out of the house again, and I go for another long distance drive for the Muncie Tourist bus. I said, oh. Yeah, so what did Rabbi Tauber say? he didn't say that answer. So he asked me, and it's an interesting approach, there are some merits to it. Okay. So I asked him, he asked me if I ever saw diamond polishing. So I said, no. He says, so I'll explain it to you. So he said, you have an expert who looks at a diamond, and the diamonds come in the raw, and they're totally not shiny. You have to polish them. He said, but the first step before you polish them is you cut them. And the person expert, he looks at the diamond, and he decides where he wants to cut it, and he puts it in a vise, in a holder, just so. And he puts pressure on it, just so. And the tremendous pressure, and it causes the diamond to crack in the two. Okay. Now you have to polish it. So now that it's cracked in the two, you have to polish it. So how do you polish a diamond? There's nothing as hard as a diamond. Diamond is the hardest substance which is known to mankind. The only thing you can polish a diamond with is a diamond. Which diamond do you polish a diamond with? The two halves. Because they're perfect opposites to each other. So you take the two sides and you rub them against each other. And the final result is a polished diamond. So the Rebbe takes out a machab and he rips them apart, rubs them against each other, and out comes polished diamonds. And that's Shalom Bayis. Gorgeous. So the goal is not, like we've spoken before, the goal is not to have conflict. Adarabba, but that's what's going to cause you to grow. And cause you to be, the goal is to have your wife say something what you think is absolutely ridiculous and learn to respect somebody else, and again, it's getting on your nerves. And the problem is, of course, that she turns out she's right. Or she's wrong. But, and she does it again. Even though she's wrong. Why do you do that? And you learn to, and it gets in your nerves. And it's frustrating. And she knows how to push your buttons. Even if she doesn't mean to push your buttons. Or she does mean to push your buttons. Right? Because she's upset about something. And that's where you learn to grow. You learn to appreciate. You learn to respect. And you learn to deal with things. And that's what's going to make you grow. And that is your Bashert.
So how do you know when it's like, oh, that's something I need to work on, and when is it something that you bring up to her and see if she could? I'm sure there are some of those also.
We'll talk about them. Okay. Okay, now. Next A is affection. So, Let's change the scenario to a father-child relationship. had a young man who his parents loved him very much. They loved him very much, and his parents like worked very hard to make sure that he had all of his needs. And, you know, they trained him well, etc. And he knew his parents loved him very much because they worked long hours, and they made sure that he had enough money that he should have all of his needs taken care of. And he was so touched by that. He was totally aware of their love to him, even though they never expressed it. Right?
No.
Work? Not work. Don't work. Right? Children need to hear from parents, I love you. Children need to interact with parents. Children need to have that emotional, because well, it's very logical. I mean, I wouldn't be working as a ward, and if your kids wouldn't be around, I wouldn't care. I can just like send you out to an orphanage, and really not work so many long hours. Like, clearly, I'm doing it because I care about you. Like, what else? It's a very logical conclusion. Why doesn't it work? Because that's not how you convey messages to human beings. Emotional human beings for sure, and even anonymous human beings for sure, like, yeah. You know, the boss says he wants to develop employee loyalty. So I give him, what do you mean? I give him a check on time every month, you know, 2 times a month. I mean, so I have employee loyalty. There are multi-billion dollar training programs to help develop loyalty. Because they should feel emotional connection to the company and to the boss, and they're not based on the fact you pay the paycheck on time. Some strange reason. To adults. To intelligent people. To the cream of the crop. It doesn't work like that. So your wife is the same way. That's what the disciple says. The woman has emotional needs. And that's the chiyuv of the husband to figure out what the emotional needs of the woman are and to address the emotional needs of the woman. That's the mitzvah of Oinah. The physical element is part of that. You've got the chos, your pre-constant chos, and Shmuel's talking more specifically about the different elements of that. But the general understanding that we're talking about, you know, that's what we're talking about. Okay.
Is that really Yashua or the stifler?
It's a stifler. Okay, and the last one is a Christ. I told you I added one more A.
That's all from affection?
What? Yeah, for now, it's all from affection. Affection is a relationship. That is like everything else is around the relationship. This is the relationship. It's I feel this connection to somebody. I care about them and I express it. Talk about Christ for a second. So I have the following scenario. I think I mentioned this to you about the father who had called me up about his about a young man in yeshiva after they'd been dating and they were about to get engaged. Like, he asked some questions about the young man, like where were you until now? This is in the good old days when the yeshiva used to have a summer camp. Called Camp Shalom, and for many years they had two facilities. They had the girls and the boys facility, but one year the girls facility had been condemned, so they had to move into a public school, and they were not able to use the facility for the summers. They moved both programs to separate parts of the boys school, but it was in the same campus. So this young man was a counselor of the boys and she was a counselor of the girls. They ended up schmoozing, because by the end of the summer they were ready to get engaged. And the father, says, this young man is like interested in dating with my daughter. Like, dating with your daughter? So he calls him up, does he have anyone to support his family? He did not. He did not have a degree. Did not have a smicha. He was still learning. He was he had no way to support a family at that point in his life. And she didn't either. He was concerned. I said, I'm going to tell you the following. This person is a person who's a Baal HaKrayos. If he has to be a busboy through the night at a 24-hour diner to support his family, he'll do that. If he needs to join the garbage collection, he'll do that. He will take care of his wife. That's his nature. It's the father wasn't so happy hearing that because the father was a degreed, degreed person, and also had smicha, and the degree, and was working in some fancy for whatever it is. And Baruch Hashem, he's actually a major. This individual is now a major supporter of Moishtis of Tara. Basically, self-taught. He taught himself computers, and then he was able to get. I was able to convince one of the organizations that maybe they just give him a try. Like, they need a job. Give him a try. What do you lose? And he did well, and that started off with a career in computers. So he has his own company now. Actually, he has two companies now. But fine. But then I had a different situation where I had a young man who had a degree and had a job and was the other end of the world, like very mild, timid, shy, not a go-getter type of person. And he was having difficulty. And somebody like, but he has such a good job, like he's, nice, sweet person, etc. Says, I want to say something. He says, a woman's presented with two individuals. Number one, individual number one has no job, but he's a go-getter, he's the type of person who takes responsibility, takes charge, etc. And number two, a person who has a job, but he's not that personality. If he loses his job, he will not be able to get another one for months or possibly longer, because he's not that person who can do that. Which one will the woman prefer? The answer, they will prefer the first one. They want stability. Stability doesn't mean they want somebody else. They want somebody who they feel will take responsibility in their marriage. If that means you're learning a Carmel, that still means, and she balances the checkbook, but she knows that if there's a financial problem, you will deal with it. You'll come up with some solution. You'll find the stopgap measure. It means you'll take a tutoring job. If it means you'll get a halva for a month, whatever it means, but she wants somebody should have a prize. And that's not just the financials. It means in everything. She feels like, she's going to make many of the decisions about dealing with things, because she knows the kids better. But she wants to know that when she has a conversation with her husband about the chinuch issue, the husband gets it, cares about it, understands it, and it has the strength to make a decision on it. She might override you. But she wants the feeling of a prize. That's what gives her the feeling of being safe in her marriage. Okay. It's 57 minutes already. So before we go to the next session is, I want to talk about different eitzes to deal with situations which are challenging. That'll be next time. But just touch on one nakuda about affection. Children need to hear that you love them. Wife needs to hear that you love her, right? Wife needs to hear that you appreciate her. Wife needs to hear that that it's not enough to think it. You have to express it. So we spoke about the writing letters, writing a note. I did one time. I went recruiting. I used to go recruiting for Yeshiva there. So my daughter was young. So the first time I went, she was very. It affected her strongly, the fact that I was gone for 2 weeks. So next time before I left, I wrote her 12 notes. And each day my wife put a note in her lunch bag. And every day there was a note from Tati in the lunch bag. And I'm thinking about her and I love her so much and I care about her, etc. So that means there's I was 6,000 miles away, but I was able to convey to her that message that I care about her. Each person has a different language a little bit. There's something called five languages of love. And each person has the expressive language and the receptive language. So some people, their language of love is words of affirmation. The more I tell them how much I appreciate them, and that means I love them. Some people, it's acts of service. That the more I do for you, the more it means I show that I care about you. Some people, it's gifts. The fact that you're willing to spend money on me is the message. And each person has a receptive language, and that's how they get their message. They also have an expressive language, which is how they say it. The problem, of course, is when the man's expressive language of love is acts of service, and the woman's receptive language of love is words of affirmation, you have a challenge. So that's part of the idea of understanding her emotional needs, is understand how does she truly absorb the message of love. Right? And you have to figure out what her receptive language is. And then you have to make your expressive language that. She needs to understand that that's the way I express myself. You know, yeah, there are marriages like that. And people make do, and people make peace with it, and people learn to understand it, etc. But you need to meet in the middle to some extent. So, there is a version of the five languages of love which is made for the firm crowd. Because so imagine some of the stories over there. I never read the other one. I imagine probably not appropriate for Bnei Yeshiva to read. But there is a version which is, I'm not sure exactly what the title of it's called, Five Languages of Love for the Bnei Yeshiva, something like that.
For FFA.
The rule's not bad.
What?
The rule's not bad.
I never read the real one, so.
Well, it changes the section on touch, so I'm sure that's not appropriate.
You know, so.
How's that?
One language of love is touch, you know, the person, you know, and that's. We'll talk about, you know, we spoke about when a woman is Anita, so that language is not there for you, so you have to be that much more aware of the other parts of it. So that goes into the world of, that is the relationship. This is being able to express to somebody else that they mean something to you, that you care about them. That those, finding the ability to do that is a tremendously important thing, because it means, again, we spoke about, you're getting into their head what they need to hear. And that is the training to be able to see the world through somebody else's eyes. So you're learning to respect their vision, you're learning to get into their head what they need, and you're learning to be able to do that. And then you can do it with your wife, you can do it with your kids, because your kids will have the same issue. And then you'll be able to do it with your neighbor, you'll be able to do it with not the female. You do it with, you know, the community. You'll be able to connect to somebody, what are their emotional needs, and how can I help them, and truly understand them. And that is a tremendously a big avoider, and that makes you into a nesina. And I just want to go back to the my friend. So Ruchaim Volozhiner, in the introduction to Nefesh HaChaim, which is published by his son Ravitzelov from Volozhin, so he writes over there in his Akdama that my father, now this is Ruchaim Volozhiner, he was not a Chassidish Yid, right? Right? He was a Talmud of the Goyen, and he was turned to Talmud Chacham, who was a Gadol Hador. He says that the Iker Brias Adam is the Lohar Lachrini, is to be able to help other human beings. It's not to be Mechadash Shlu Shetara, and not to write Svarim, it's to be aware of somebody else. And probably charity starts at home. The first person you should do that with is your wife. We would like to believe that. So, you know, had I responded to that individual, that's what I could have told him. And this is what it means. It doesn't mean just to do acts of service. Yeah, I take out the garbage every day, you know. And I, you know, I help clean up after the Shabbos Suda, and I help clean up after Shabbos. That's all important. And it is very important. But that's not it. So that's what our goal is over here. Okay.